And Shobogenzo is about 100 chapters long, so it's a fairly large text. And this is book four of four volumes in English, so many of you, I'm sure you're familiar with it. So the text is called Koku. So first I want to start by talking about what koku means. So the word koku is usually translated as space. So the fascicle's name is space, but it also means emptiness. So as you may recall, when we talk about emptiness is the shorthand to mean to something lacks inherent existence, right? Empty of inherent existence. So often we get confused about this and we think, oh, it means that something doesn't exist, but it just means that it doesn't have inherent existence. So if something doesn't have inherent existence, that means that it's in an interconnecting relationship, an interpenetrating relationship. So emptiness is not just talking about things not having inherent existence, but it also means that this is a genesis of compassion, right? This is a genesis of our empathy, is that we know that we are in this interconnected relationship, this interpenetrating relationship. So koku points to that. That's one of the things that this fascicle is pointing to. The other word, space. Space is an interesting word. The Sanskrit word for space is akasha. So akasha has many meanings. It can mean nirvana, which is interesting. It can mean local, right? Often we don't think of nirvana as being local, but we know that nirvana is right here, right? Nirvana is not even this close. Nirvana is like, right? So there's nirvana, vast, empty. It also means door. This word means door. So this would be like, what makes a doorway, what makes a window, is the space, right? It's not just the form part of it, but it's also the space part. It's also entering into. So there's this way in which we enter into. It creates boundaries, and yet at the same time it does not hinder something. Space does not hinder, but it's part of boundaries. So if we think about dancing, let's say we talk about art, we say the space in an art, the negative space, is just as important as a positive space. So this is this interplay, this going back and forth. We say form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Both of these things happening simultaneously. Also, akasha means brightness, brightness. In Uji, Dogen talks about the radiant brightness of your day. Uji means being time. The radiant brightness of your day in your 24 hours. So this sense of our Buddha nature, the sense of this brightness that happens, this inner connection, this deep gratitude, this appreciation, this aliveness, this process of our lives. So all that is in this word, space. All this is held in this word, koku, space and emptiness. Okay, so I want to tell you a koan. Well, first I want to do the first line of the fascicle is, first line of the fascicle is, provoked by the question, what is right here? So this is the beginning line of Dogen's fascicle. Provoked by the question, what is right here? The way actualizes and Buddha ancestors emerge. So this question, what is it? This is a question that we should address with curiosity. What is our lives? It's also the answer to the question. So there's this curiosity about what is it? But what is it? What is it? This life of what? This thing, this essence, this being, is it, is reality itself. So we say, what is the essence of this? What is the being of our life? What is the being and essence of this person, of this thing? What does it mean to be in this life? What is it? What is reality itself? This provokes us. This is the profound question. But we have to ask that question with specificity. We can't ask the question as some kind of generalized what if. It has to take on a real form in our lives. Often the way this form is taken is we say, is vow, or bodhisattva vow. What does it mean to be in an interconnected relationship with all beings? What does it mean to say, we save all beings? What does that mean? What is it? Provoked by the question, what is right here, the way actualizes. This is the way. This is Buddha's way. This is what actualizes. This is what comes forth for us in this question. And Buddha ancestors emerge. We are Buddha ancestors. Buddha ancestors are all those who come before us, all those who will come after us, all arising right in this moment, right in this what is it. These are the Buddha ancestors coming forward. We are not separate from that. This is our actualization. This is the lacking inherent existence. This is what happens in the impermanence and the reality of this moment of reality just as it is. So we're provoked by this question. So here's the koan. This is called Ofuke Overturns the Table. Rinzai asked, a hare swallows the vast ocean and a mustard seed includes the sacred Mount Sumeru. Okay, a hare, this kind of hare, swallows the vast ocean. And a mustard seed, very small, includes Mount Sumeru. Mount Sumeru is the center of the Buddhist universe. So it's all in a mustard seed. Should we see this as the mystical powers and wondrous function? Rinzai is asking, should we see this as something mystical and wondrous? Or should we see it as reality as it is? Often we think about something being mystical and wondrous as outside of ourselves. Dogen wrote a fascicle called Mystical Powers, and in that fascicle he says that to chop wood and carry water is mystical powers. Our everyday life is reality, just as it is, our mystical powers. Nothing special, just chopping wood, carrying water. We've all heard that expression, right? So that's mystical powers. So Rinzai is asking this question. So what is Fuke's response? He turns over the dinner table, just flips it right over. Are you guys over at lunch? You know, you're having lunch and somebody's doing some kind of Dharma thing. Oh, what is this? You know, is this like, what is emptiness? And what's the this, the that? And all of a sudden, the person throws over the table. Rinzai's response was, he said, very coarse person. Very coarse response. Fuke said, this concrete place is where it is. Explain it as coarse or explain it as fine. Fuke throws over the table and Rinzai says, wow, that was really kind of rude. That was really kind of coarse. That was like really throwing it in my lap, you know? And Fuke says, this place is where it is. This place, not somewhere else, but this place. Whether it's coarse or fine, this is the place right here. Often we think practice is somewhere else. We think practice is we have to go somewhere special. We have to do something. Although this is pretty special, right? I'm sitting here. Our Zendo is right on the road on 41st Avenue. So cars going by all the time. I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, this is pretty nice. You know? You can probably hear birds here. The other morning I was sitting Zazen and there was this gap of sound. Wow, I think it went on for like a minute.
Between the cars?
Yeah. It was like, I was like going, that is really bizarre. There's this whole like gap in here of no sound. A bird could get in there, you know? But it doesn't matter because that concrete place is where I'm doing Zazen. That's the Zazen right there. I'm not here, I'm there. So that place is reality just as it is. That place is what is this? So for me, it's that place, not this place. If it's this place in my mind, then it's not a concrete place. It's some idea I have about practice that's someplace different from my actual experience. But our practice happens. Our practice is actualized, provoked by this moment we're living, just this moment, not some other time, not some other place. So that's what he's expressing when he flips over the table. You know, those guys back then, they really just did these big things. You know, Wakey cuts off his arm to prove his practice. So we don't have to go to those extremes. We don't have to flip over the table. Probably wouldn't be appropriate. All we have to do is respond to this moment. Dogen says in the Genjo Koan, he says, to carry the self forward is delusion, to allow myriad things to come forth as realization. To carry the self forward is to carry the small self forward, to carry our likes and dislikes forward in a way that's not appropriate for the situation. To allow myriad things to come forth is to respond to the totality of your situation in that moment, which includes the other person, it includes things, it includes the environment. The environment's a perfect example, because as human beings, we tend to say, what are you doing for me? You know, what can I use this thing for? I don't care what I do to the environment, as long as it's doing something for me. But of course, that's not responding to myriad things. And now it's catching up with us, right? Now we have to deal with the fact that we're destroying our environment. Because we carried ourselves forward. Human beings have a tendency to carry the self forward and not allow to meet, be with the myriad things that are coming forward. The capping verse for this koan is, let others search for the miraculous or judge crudeness or fineness. I only know plum blossoms are white, azalea flowers are red. Let others search for the miraculous or judge crudeness or fineness. I only know plum blossoms are white and azalea flowers are red. In this moment, this moment, this moment. Okay. Here's the main koan of the case, the main koan of the fascicle. Very similar to the one that I just read. Shakko Isu asked his younger Dharma brother, Sato Chizo, do you know how to grasp emptiness? Do you know how to grasp emptiness? And so this is his older Dharma brother, so it means he's been practicing longer. And he's asking his younger Dharma brother, he says, okay, show me. I want to see what emptiness looks like. Okay, lack inherent existence. Well, show me how that is. And he says, Master Sato says, yes, I know how to grasp. I know how to show you. I know how to grasp emptiness. And Master Shakko says, well, okay, fine. How do you grasp it? And Sato goes like this. He goes, okay. Now, what do you think? How do we grasp emptiness? How do we do that? He goes like this. So, Shakyo said, you don't know how to grasp emptiness. And Sato said, well, okay, older brother, show me. Show me how to grasp emptiness. Shakyo poked his finger up Sato's nose and he pulled it away, right? So he's like, imagine. You're having this little Dharma discussion. Your older Dharma brother sticks his finger up your nose and goes like this, right? He goes, and pulls his nose. Sato says, oh, he said, that hurt. Ouch. That was really painful. You tried to pull my nose off. Jakyo says, well, now you know how to grasp it. Now you know how to grasp emptiness. He says, ouch. Ah, now you know how to grasp emptiness. Right here, right now, this real thing. Flip over the table, grab your nose. Is that how anybody want to try that? But doesn't reality sometimes feel that way? Doesn't it sometimes feel that way in your life? You're going along, something happens, and you're like, ouch, that hurt. That emotionally hurt, it physically hurt. I was just up in the bathroom. So I came out of the stall, and I took my hand, and I was holding onto the bathroom door when it closed, and I squished my fingers in the door, right? So the first thing I thought, first I had a thought, which I think is interesting. First I had a thought, which was, I shouldn't have held the door that way. And then right after that was like pain. It's just like really bad pain. So I totally forgot the thought. It was just like, I, So there's this way in which reality just brings us back. But we're so resistant to it, you know? We don't want the ouch. We go, oh, it's so-and-so's fault. Or, oh, it's my fault. Something like that. It should have been different. It's too coarse. It's too fine, you know? It's not azaleas are red. It's ouch, ouch. So this way that we just come back. So I'll give you a different example, real life example that's less painful. But sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it's like, you know how this feels in your life? It's like you're going along and bang. You're going along, you said the wrong thing. You're going along. Something happens. But these are nice examples. I was standing in the post office line, and there were maybe, I don't know, 30 people ahead of me in the post office last week. And I was standing there, and a guy came up, and he had a whole bunch of packages that he put down on the ground underneath the counter. And one of them dropped off on the floor, and somebody immediately came over and picked it up. And then his pencil rolled off the package and somebody came and picked that pencil. Here's an example of just completely responding to the moment. This is an example of having your nose pulled. This is an example of being provoked by the moment. The person who just immediately came and picked up the pencil was provoked by that moment. It was myriad things arising in that moment. It was reality just as it is in that moment. Coming and responding to that moment. So a little while later, I don't know, 5 minutes, this guy came over who was older and didn't walk very well, and he was sitting in a folding chair next to in the front of the line, waiting his turn. You know, he wasn't trying to cut in line. And this woman said, "Please, you go first." The first woman and the woman who was first in line said, "Here, you go ahead of me, please. You go now." And he's like, No, it's okay." And she's like, "No, please." And he was really thankful. I thought, this is amazing. Just in, you know, the last 5 minutes I've been standing here and I've seen these amazing racks, you know, acts of random kindness right here. This happens all the time. This is being provoked by the moment. This is actually completely immersing yourself in the moment, dropping the self. So often we think dropping the self has got to be something special. We think it's some kind of mystical powers, right? But it's, you are Buddha. In that moment, we are actualizing Buddha. Dogen says, we are Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas who do not even know that we are Buddhas. This is the act of the Buddha. Coming forward and just picking up that person's pencil. Putting the package back on top of the rack. That's all, you know, that's the act of a Buddha. That's our practice. That's actualizing our practice in our daily lives. Where else does it happen? Where else are we Buddhists? Where else do we enact realization but in our everyday life? Right? In this concrete moment. That's the point about pulling his nose. Is he saying, right here, it's not this. This is a idea of how you answer a koan. This is like an intellectual idea about something. But having your nose pulled is such an immense sensory experience, right? That you just like completely are in that moment. And that moment, of that appropriate response to that moment is, ouch, that hurt, you know? So Dogen says about this, he says, how do you grasp it? Means even if you call it as it is, you have changed it already. This is a tough quote. Okay, so listen, please. How do you grasp it? It means even if you call it as it is, you have changed it already. And although it is like this, in changing with it, the thus gone exists. That makes sense?
Read that again.
I will. It's a rhetorical question. It doesn't make sense so far, but hopefully it'll make sense of it. So how do you grasp it means, even if you call it as it is, you have changed it already. So this moment of grasping, this moment of meeting the moment, right? Grasping the nose, meeting the moment, is impermanence. This is this interconnected moment of emptiness. This is entering through the gate, entering through the door of space. In this moment, it just changes. It just is impermanent. This moment, and this moment, and this moment, one after another. He says, how do you grasp it? Means even if you call it as it is, you have changed it already. And although it is like this, although this impermanence, this life, this moment is like this, in changing with it, thus gone exists. So thus gone means, is the word nyoko in Japanese, which means this moment right now, or it also refers to the Tathagata, the thus come one and the thus gone one. Right? So he's saying that in this moment of our response, in this complete interconnected, interpenetrating moment of our response, of emptiness, of no inherent existence, of space, of entering the gateway, of being provoked by that moment. In this moment is exactly where it is. In this moment is the moment of Buddha nature, is the moment of the Tathagata, is the moment of our reality expressing itself. What is it? What is it? What is it? What is this moment that we're engaged in? What is this connection of moment? Sometimes we think about it. Sometimes we have to think about it. Sometimes we just respond. Sometimes the pencil rolls off the box and we pick it up and we put it on the box. Sometimes things happen and we say, maybe I wasn't very good there in that moment. Maybe I want to do something different. Maybe something else needs to happen. So it's this full engagement with this moment, inclusive of the other. It's not just about our likes and dislikes. So he's saying it's beyond your identification of it as being coarse and fine in that first koan when he talks about that. So I'll tell you one more story here. I was reading this book called Only Don't Know. Are you guys familiar with this book? It's by a Korean Zen master whose last name is Song. I think that's how you say it. S-A-H-N. Song. Master Song. And he died in 2004. So the book Only Don't Know is very interesting. He wrote several books. And in these books he writes, his students would write him letters and then he would respond, and these are the letters that he would write back to his students. So he got a letter from a young nun who had been doing monastic training with him. And she was traveling in Japan with two other Korean nuns who had been nuns for a much longer time, who were senior to her. And she wrote her teacher and she said, you know, one of the nuns is kind of sad all the time. And the other nun has like these physical complaints. So she'd be, you know, I guess she had arthritis or something, and she'd go, oh, you know, my knees hurt today, or my hands hurt, or whatever. So the young nun wrote and she said, my only concern is that they seem to suffer more than I expected nuns would. Because we all know that if you're ordained, you don't suffer at all, and certainly don't talk about it if you do, right? They aren't really doing what we call hard training. So in her mind, hard training is this monastic training where, you know, you're standing out in the freezing cold and your bare feet, that kind of thing, you know. This is actually the fantasy that we often have about what monastic training is about. But I can tell you, having lived at Tassajara for many years and also having stood around in 32-degree weather in my bare feet, that the real training is the training that we all need no matter where we are, because we take all of our stuff to the monastery with us. We take all the likes and dislikes that we have. We have all the same stuff going on. We got all those people there, and we're having the same kind of problems we had at our work or wherever else that we were. So you don't get to escape that part of your life. So she says, okay, so she says, you know, well, I think they suffer more than I would expect nuns to suffer, and they aren't really doing what we call hard training. She says, well, they don't seem to be, you know, kind of practicing types. So here's what her teacher wrote back. He said, I think you are practicing correctly now, right? And that before this trip, when you were in the monastery, when you were training, before this trip, you were practicing the easy way. That is, only sitting practice or monastic training. So probably this young nun had a lot of judgments, right? And maybe doing monastic practice wasn't so hard for her. Maybe doing sitting practice wasn't so hard for her. And maybe when she was out traveling around with these nuns, she had a lot of ideas about what practice was and wasn't. Also, the nuns wanted to go sightseeing, which she kind of frowned upon as well. This new style of practicing is not so easy, this traveling practice, this action zen. He continued, there are many kinds of Buddhist practice, though our inside job is the same. The inside job of our practice is the same. Saving all beings from suffering. That's our inside job. That's our practice. That's actualizing practice. That's a good koan. What does it mean to save all beings? That's a very good koan. That's also what is it? What does it mean to save it, all beings? What is that? So in this moment, this young nun is being provoked by her experience. She's having her nose pulled. She's out there. Things aren't going the way she thinks they should go. So she's being asked to do what he calls action zen. This is, you know, I'd say the rubber meets the road. This is where we go out and it's not about some idea we have. But even, you know, formal practice, all of you, I'm sure, know, even no matter what ideas we bring to practice, when we actually practice, then we practice. When we actually practice, we find out maybe some of our ideas were fit and some of our ideas didn't fit. But we actually engage in that moment. We actually come to meet our experience just as it is. Flip over the table, we get our nose pulled, we're provoked by circumstances. So let me read the first line again. And provoked by the question. So being provoked can be having your nose pulled. And I would say those are the experiences that really bring us up short. And being provoked is also the circumstances itself. Same thing, actually. But in the example of going to the post office, being provoked is that act of kindness, picking up the pencil for somebody else. So provoked isn't just kind of a negative word, but it's this way in which we respond. We are being asked by our circumstances to respond in that moment, to respond in a way where we meet the moment itself, we meet the totality of what's happening in that moment. Provoked by the question. And this is our practice. Our practice is, what is it? We all have a question that brings us to practice. There's something going on for us that we're saying, I don't understand this. I don't know what's going on. I want to answer this question in my life. And we come here and we do this practice, and something about it says to us, yes, this may be the space, the doorway, the place where I can truly investigate the nature of this question that I have. So we're being provoked by this question to practice, to meet our life. And that activity itself is the actualization of our Buddha way. Dogen says, practice realization, one word, practice realization, the practice itself, asking that question, putting ourselves here, this practice is an expression of our realization. This is the actualization. This is the thus come one, right in this moment of having our nose pulled. Right here, being together, Buddha Dharma Sangha, being together. So please, I encourage you here, and I'm assuming that many of you, I don't know if you all are living here. How many people actually live here? So almost everybody is probably has a job, or you're out working or live down, and you know, we have what we call lay life, right? I live a lay life. I live in a house. I have a partner. I go to the post office. I go grocery shopping, I drive my car around. Each one of those moments is this opportunity to practice. Each one of those moments is this way in which reality itself is saying, what, how? Now, respond to this moment. All right, thank you very much. What do you think? Yes, please.
Oh. Just bowing to you.
Oh, okay. You don't have to talk.
Your nose pulling, I thought of saying if there's any relation to the nose to the grindstone.
Well, if you put your nose to a grindstone, you definitely know something's happening. Absolutely. Nose to the grindstone is an interesting image, because usually we think about it as it's about working, right? About really applying your effort. And that, too, is a question, very interesting question about how do we make our best effort? You know, what is our best effort? Usually we don't think of nose to the grindstone as necessarily a good thing, but we have to, you know, we do have to make an effort at this. Please.
Take you back to the post office.
Yes, please.
I was putting myself in that situation of watching the pencil falling off the package.
Yeah.
And I think that my response would probably have been to pick up the pencil. But as I considered that, it occurred to me that that response fell into a conceptual world,
mm-hmm.
that is the world of what it means to be polite and kind
mm-hmm.
and proper
mm-hmm.
and helpful.
Uh-huh.
But I was imagining what it would be like to for everybody on the line to just watch the pencil.
Mm-hmm.
What? And not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But to simply be with that moment
mm-hmm.
and not have to bring in this, you know. And I have the sense that because this is bringing ourselves forward in a way, bringing ourselves into the world of seasonal kindness and general kindness. And not to say that I have anything against kindness, but what would that experience have been like if everybody, this was the moment of what?
Well, I think maybe everybody would have been in a different place, because I think at that moment the appropriate response was the person who picked up the pencil. I think everybody else would have been like, it would have been, I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think that sometimes we act because out of some sense of I should do this, some sense of an idea about what I should be doing. I think in this case it was very spontaneous, but I think what you're saying is true. Sometimes we jump into things because we have some idea about what we should be doing. And when we find ourselves doing that, I think you're right. It's better to stop. It's better to just just stop and say, what am I doing? You know, what is it that's happening for me here? Sometimes in our culture, people get caught in doing too much, that we put ourselves out and we do too much. So I think this, in a way, this is about knowing yourself. I mean, part of practice is knowing ourselves. Who are we? You know, what do we do are we too helpful? You know, are we somebody who's always jumping in to help when maybe it's actually not so helpful? Not so helpful to us, not so helpful to the other person? Are we an anger type? Are we somebody who gets angry whenever something happens? Are we somebody who gets critical? Are we somebody who gets jealous? Do we feel like a victim? Who are we? What kind of constellation do we have in our personality? What do we need to work on? And that's going to determine what is the appropriate response in the situation. So it's really, again, this notion of myriad things coming forward. It's not just things from the outside coming forward. It's the causes and conditions of your life as well, the causes and conditions of who you are, which is one of the reasons that we function in a sangha. We function in a group, and it's a reason that we have teachers so that we have feedback in a way that hopefully we have skillful and helpful feedback for us to work. Sounds like the lunch.
It's our lunch bell, but we can continue if there's other questions as well.
So does that make sense what I'm saying?
Sense?
Okay.
Well, for me, the question what has a period, has a question mark after it and then a period. That is, I'm thinking about Hong Shi, who speaks about wandering into a circle of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the koan occurs in that exact moment when you say, what? And that's it. It's the pencil falls off the package. And, what?
Mm-hmm.
And for somehow, I would think at that moment, maybe everyone in the post office would become sangha. Everyone would wander into this circle of wonder of that.
But everyone in the post office is already sangha. And everyone in the post office is already in the circle of wonder. Everyone in the whole world is sangha. There is no separation. So that situation already exists. So just think about that. It already is there. And so we just are expressing that. That's myriad things arising simultaneously, which is always happening. It's not something that sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't happen. So the appropriate response is really predicated on the moment itself, the totality of what's happening in that experience. So sometimes it's good to stop and sometimes it's good to act. It really depends on the moment. You can't think of hypotheticals are good, but it's like in that moment, that was what was happening in that moment. So, yes.
I like what you said, a question mark and a period kind of cancels each other out to create that. I keep thinking of our last talk, and I said an existential moment, and it kind of sounds like that to me. When something happens, you don't know where you are, you don't know what to do, and it just happens. I don't think that it's always obvious.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
So when somebody pulls your nose, flips the table, slaps or whatever,
yeah.
Or goes, instead of immediately running after the pencil, allowing the moment to be, it just doesn't happen. I think it takes practice.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for your patience.
You're welcome.
The idea of a provocation is interesting in terms of a teacher being provoked
mm-hmm.
to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall back in the early days of this sangha, a lot of us would like to provoke Kogen Roshi to respond to different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We weren't clear on it. And he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You walk your own way, you fall your own way, you get up your own way, you learn your own way.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And you guys were also with him, right? You were with him. So there was a kind of, it's also a teaching style, but it wasn't necessary for him in a way, and probably not helpful for him to say that, right? This, that. And you were together with each other. And so there was a kind of fullness that came out of that. I remember him at Tassajara, we were talking about this earlier, you know, he had this, I always felt he had this incredible generosity of spirit when you were with him, and this sense of, you never knew, in a way, what he was going to do. This sense of, like, you know, you really did feel like you were with a Zen master. But this way in which he let you find your own way, and I think that's a really important teaching. And that's letting the circumstances come to meet you, and that you figure that out. Dogen says, you know, you get up by the ground, you fall down and you get up by the ground. So this way in which we fall down and we get up, and we fall down and we get up. And that moment of getting up tells us something about the nature of that.
Sometimes the provocation was maybe